Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 338, Fringified, Sunday, November 17th, 2024. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, and off the shelf. Hello and welcome. It is afternoon turning to evening on a very seasonally warm day here at my home near Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania. The sun has been shining. It was near 60s in the afternoon, and I was able to do some very easy leaf raking. I even raked some areas that I don't normally get to because the leaf litter is so completely dry because of our drought conditions here that it was very easy to rake and remove leaves. So that was some great time spent outside, and now I'm back in to catch up with Yarns at Yin Hu listeners regarding my knitting and other projects. Thank you so much for those of you who continue to support this podcast with your Ko-fi contributions and to new subscribers and new contributors. I'm so appreciative of the support you give this podcast by listening, by recommending to friends who you think would enjoy it, by liking my Instagram posts and reels, and by making contributions that help me pay for different aspects of keeping an audio podcast up and running. To show my thanks, I have quarterly prizes, and for quarter four, there are two prizes. One is a Rhinebeck prize pack with some sought-after goodies, and another is a beautiful 2025 calendar that has been contributed by supporter Kate of the Moon and the Furrow. This is gorgeous. I talked about these at length in my previous episode, 337, and there are photographs of these prizes on my Ko-fi page. It is that time for Yarns at Yin Hu puzzle swap partners to be shipping out their packages. If you've had any difficulty contacting a swap partner, please message me and let me know. But as far as I can tell, everyone is happily chatting, and either they have sent packages already or they are about to go out soon, because the swap package opening begins on December 1st. And I'm really excited about this year. My swap partner is Ellen Silva, Twinset Ellen, and I'm eager to get her feedback on the things that I put together for her, and excited to get a puzzle that I put together during the month of December. Last year, this became a really beautiful part of my morning practice. This time of year, in the Northern Hemisphere, the mornings are dark and often cold, and it's really nice to light a candle and to open a little package and do a small section of a puzzle and just linger in the morning and have a really beautiful, slow start. I enjoyed this swap immensely last year, and as we turn to a season of deeper contemplation, dark and cold, I am welcoming in this beautiful opportunity for a gift swap. Since the last time I recorded an episode, I have attended two fibery events. One is the New Jersey Fiber Shed Fleece and Yarn Sale. I attended with my friend D. This was held at the Hunterdon Art Museum this year. The folks had an absolutely gorgeous fall day in the plaza right in Clinton by the dam and the bridge. It looked to be very well attended. Everyone was in good spirits. It was a good opportunity to shop and interact with the farmers and other makers. And then the exhibits in the museum were just perfectly suited to people interested in the fiber arts, because there was a doll exhibit, a handmade doll exhibit, and a quilt exhibit as well. I left with a few gifts, some fiber that I will be carding and spinning up and talking a little more about when I do that, maybe into the deeper winter season. And I also left with some flax seed. I talked to a flax farmer there and grew interested in the possibility of growing a small, very modest patch of flax on a small strip of property which gets very ample sunshine that Samuel and I have purchased in a neighboring town. The gardens there are very, very different from what we have here in the woody creekside Yinhu property. And flax thrives on a lot of sunshine and does well with sort of moderate or even moderately poor soil conditions and has beautiful flowers. I think it will be good for the pollinators. I'm trying to turn this patch of untended yard into a pollinator haven instead of a manicured lawn. And I think with more species, more flowers, more variety, it will look more like a pollinator haven and less like an untended, unlovely piece of property. So I've been collecting seeds here at Yinhu. I have a lot of seeds from my Dyer's Cosmos plant and also from Echinacea plants. My hope was to scatter some seeds and add some compost this fall. However, it's been so dry that I think I will wait till spring and the chance of all frosts being over before I plant these seeds. It just hasn't been the kind of fall where seeding makes a lot of sense. So I've been pulling seed heads and I've been drying a lot of seeds, and then I'll seal them up and keep them, maybe give some away as gifts, but keep the remainder to cast in this lot and hopefully amplify the different types of varieties and add a patch of flax where I actually turn the soil and look to enrich it a bit with some compost, maybe some additional soil, and see if I can grow a patch of flax. One of my inspirations has been watching the film The Nettle Dress. I know many listeners are probably familiar, but if you are not, right now, through the end of November, The Nettle Dress is in international release so that you can buy the ability to watch it digitally between November 15th, I think, and the end of the month. And if you are interested in a beautiful story that involves making really, really slow making process, this nettle dress that is indicated in the title of the film took 7 years to make, then I think you will appreciate the story that is told in this film by an independent filmmaker and a man who started, I guess, out of curiosity, but then this practice became really a life journey and a healing practice from loss and just a whole number of things. This nettle dress has become a metaphor. I think you will enjoy it. So I'll put a link in the show notes for you to find out more information. I've watched this twice already, and I'm considering purchasing it to watch again over the Thanksgiving holiday because it's just so beautiful, and I like this story to wash over me. It also, this payment includes a little bit of a background story and Q&A along with the film itself. So well worth the investment. I wish that it were showing at theater houses in the United States, but so far it hasn't been released internationally except with this kind of digital download situation. That's the nettle dress. Last Sunday, I went to Hartford Stitch in Hartford, Connecticut to take a class on the embroidered portrait with Beverly Army. I have long been following Beverly Army's investment in the 100 Days project and various types of embroidery and writing projects, and have not had the opportunity to actually take a class with her. So it just happened that this timing worked out and that the idea of an embroidered portrait was interesting to me, especially in terms of getting a grip on a new identity that comes with a markedly changed appearance. And so I went to this class. It was a three-hour class in a really nice and well-appointed sewing studio in Hartford, and learned how to take a photograph and make it possible to stitch this photograph with embroidery stitches and make choices that would really allow aspects of the portraiture to shine through. So we did not work with color. We worked more with aspects of line and dimension and different aspects of the face having character. I was the only one in the class who brought photographs of herself to do for this project. The other participants had photographs of family members, and then one participant had this very interesting idea for a project where she envisioned stitching portraits of very famous strong women and having kind of like a gallery wall of them, which was very interesting to me. And so we learned a lot about the process, different processes for transferring an image to cloth, what to keep in mind in terms of transferring those lines, and then what kinds of stitches and what thicknesses of thread would work well to delineate different aspects of a portrait. The image that I chose was one from this fall, maybe late summer, when Samuel and I traveled up to Windy Brow Farms, which is not too far from here, and I had the best ice cream cone of my life. It was fig, walnut, and goat cheese ice cream. It was absolutely extraordinary. And I took a photograph of myself holding this ice cream cone with sunglasses on and this big grin on my face just before I devoured this ice cream cone. And I didn't have a lot to choose from because I've only looked this certain way for not too long. And it was really important to me to have the super short hair and, you know, other aspects of my appearance that I'm learning to accept and to embrace, I guess you could say. We'll just say this portrait is part of like a journey of self-acceptance. And so everyone in the class was really supportive of one another and the images that they chose and shared ideas. And then, you know, we all got to working on our own individual projects. So in leaving the class, I had traced this image. I had transferred it to a beautiful antique table runner that was given to me by my friend Mary Beth. And I just stuck in my bag at the last moment on kind of a whim, but was encouraged by Beverly Army to use that piece of fabric for this, because then she said I could add other things embroidered onto the table runner. So I had that transferred, and then I basted a backing fabric to the center panel, and then I began doing some of the stitches and thinking about how I would execute this whole process. And now I am working just a little bit of a time, happily stitching on this embroidered portrait, and it is giving me a lot of joy. And I really do like that I am committed to just using one color. And I went for a deep gray thread as opposed to a black. It's a little less harsh, and maybe a little more forgiving. And yeah, I'm having fun working on it, and I'll include some photographs in the show notes for this episode. The back porch. Since I spoke to you last, I have begun and completed a test knit for Laura Bellows of Jewel Designs, and this is for a pattern she's calling Mesa, which is a collared shawl design. It's super, super simple, knit entirely in garter stitch, and it features a long scarf like dimensions, and attached to that by casting on some extra stitches is a collar. You can follow a pattern. She has two scales for the pattern, or you can use the recommendation she gives to take your own body measurements, think about your own preferences for the piece, and then create your own custom pattern. And that is what she suggested I do, so that is what I did. For this test knit, I started late because I was committed to using Tidal Yarns from Patricia of Tidal Yarns. And Patricia was so generous, and I selected some undyed yarn that's like silvery gray. Of course, it's heathered. It's not one consistent color because it's completely natural and undyed. And I knit this fingering weight yarn on US 4 needles. So it was quite a squishy gauge. And, you know, garter stitch is easy because you don't have to purl. But it doesn't add up very quickly in rows because the rows are short and dense and they build up on one another very slowly. I wanted a pop of color around my face, and I wanted to achieve this without using two different types of yarn and doing something like intarsia. So I determined that what I would do, and I never swatched or checked that this would work. I never asked the designer if she thought this would be a good idea. I just launched into it because that's the way I tend to do things. I launched into using scraps of mohair silk yarn in a wide array of colors to knit the collar. So as I would turn the work and knit across the collar stitches, I would hold the title yarns together with some mohair silk. And then I would drop the color when I stopped knitting the collar and then continue across, turn the work, and then I would just pick up that color to finish the collar piece and then leave a long tail hanging off and break the yarn. So the fringe was initially quite long and unruly, but then I trimmed it down when I completed the collar. And I kind of came up with like a little bit of a color scheme for the order of the colors as I knit. And then I realized that I wouldn't have enough of some of those colors. So in the center back, I did some neutrally colored yarn like whites and grays and browns. And then I went back to using the colors for the opposite side, and I managed that color scheme in the opposite direction. So it doesn't exactly match 100%, but it gives the appearance of matching, I think. And it achieves the goal of framing my face with a little bit of color and having a little bit of fringe, because my objective for this knitted piece was to have something that combined the integrity of this really beautiful, carefully selected fleeces in a farm yarn with sort of the bright pop of color and the on-trend look of mohair silk. And I feel really good about what I was able to achieve. I saw the vision through. And what's more, Laura is really enthusiastic about this leap I took with the piece. Her knitting designs tend to be quite simple, and that makes them classic. It makes the yarn that you use really shine in the piece. And then, of course, she is marketing her jewel designs fasteners as jewelry pieces that go extraordinarily well with these knitted items. And you can fasten and arrange them in a variety of different ways. So it makes one knitted piece have a lot of legs in terms of how you can wear it throughout the season and sort of change it up. And her clasps and studs and different kinds of things have the quality of really finely made jewelry. They don't pull on or pierce or destroy your knits. So they're very thoughtfully designed. And they could be on trend, but they could also have some classic beauty. She has several different lines of these things. So when I had attended Wool and Folk last October, Jewel Designs was one of the stops that I want to make. And I purchased from her a set of three, I think they're in this like postmodern design, these studs that look like buttons. And you can see them in my photographs of the finished piece. I'm also very gratified that so many people have enjoyed looking at the video I have of myself modeling this finished piece on Instagram. So you can see those pieces there. But they are not the only kinds of fasteners you could use for a piece like this. She has a whole bunch of different options. So I will, of course, be sharing you more information when she has this Mesa pattern completely in hand and ready to send out into the world for purchase. I'll be letting you know. I can recommend the design. It's a lot of knitting. It's a lot of knitting. But I think it's worth it because the durability and usability of this finished object is pretty extensive. Once again, that's Mesa, a test knit for Laura Bellows of Jewel Designs, and I knit that in Tidal Yarns fingering weight yarn in natural colors. I didn't leave my Rhinebeck experience with very much yarn. I have some sweater quantities on my shelf that I'm planning to knit. And I used a lot of my time just to touch and look at different yarn lines so that I understood what the yarn was, what it is, in case I want to make a purchase later. And that's an approach I take in fabric stores as well, to just really investigate the products and try to memorize my associations with them, so that if I encounter it later and I want to make an online purchase, I have a much better understanding of what I'm buying. And quite a few yarns impressed me in this way, and I just kind of like store away the information. One that I was curious about, because I've heard so many people talking about it, but I've never touched it or experienced it, is all the yarn from Sonder Yarns. And so they had an extensive booth at the Woolen Affair, and I looked at all their colors and have a better understanding of their weights of yarn. And then I ended up purchasing a skein of their Halo, which is their mohair silk blend, just in black, because I thought it would be useful to hold double on my next knit, which is the Soul Blouse by Agio Knit. And I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's a drop shoulder sweater featuring color work that was inspired by Korean script. So it has a very graphic appearance to it. The sample sweater is done in like a neutral color and then like a black or very, very dark gray. And so I had already purchased Carol Foster's Concordia yarn in a light undyed color and then a dark undyed color. And I don't know why I thought that the dark color was like nearly black. It isn't. It's like a walnut brown color. It's beautiful. And I loved it when I picked the yarn. But then somehow I selected this black mohair lace to go with it. And it's not going to work. So I have since ordered a skein of mohair silk yarn from Lichen and Lace in a walnut color, which is like a better match to Carol's Concordia. And I think I'm going to like that a lot better. And then I was thinking, well, what can I do with this black mohair silk? And I have enjoyed holding mohair silk double with fingering weight yarn I have in my stash to knit the Lenny hat. And a few holidays ago, I knit a whole bunch of Lenny hats, and I really enjoy that pattern by Isabel Kramer. And so I picked out some Foster Sheep Farm Hudson fingering yarn that was plant dyed with indigo. So it's like a heathered yarn that has indigo and some really deep brown in it. And that looks really, really sharp with this black mohair silk. So I'm going to hold that double to knit the Lenny hat. In my three previous versions of this hat, I never did the bobbles. So I think I might try the bobbles in this one. There's some interesting stitch pattern in the Lenny hat, which is a free pattern, by the way, and a great gift knit. But some interesting stitches where you leave yarn running across the front of the knitting and then you pull it up in a subsequent row to make it look like a little tree. It's like simple, elegant. It's a great unisex design. I really like this hat, so I'm happy to have cast on another one, and I'm knitting away on that while I'm waiting for my yarn from Lichen and Lace so I can begin the color work portion of this Soul Blouse. I have cast on the sweater. I have done the shoulder increases. And what's interesting about this color work sweater is that it's not a round yoke. The increases are done along two points at opposite sides of the sweater that run down the shoulders. And then the resulting color work does not circle around the neck like most color work yoke sweaters. Instead, it's angular and it goes straight across the body. I really like this look. I have another sweater that I've knit with this kind of construction, and this one has sort of bat wing sleeves. It's not a drop shoulder. I get a lot of compliments on it and I really enjoy wearing it. So when I saw this sole blouse, I thought that is a knit that I would really like to do. And so far I've really liked working on it. I feel confident about the fit. I'm just knitting the smallest size on the recommended needles. And I was able to try it on. And then because I'm still waiting for this yarn to arrive, I also did the I-cord edging all around the neckline. That looks nice, lays flat. And so now when the mohair silk finally does arrive, I am ready to work color work for the first time flat. I thought about creating a steek for the armholes, but I think what I'm going to try is Patty Lyon's techniques for knitting backwards and doing color work and see what kind of an even tension I can maintain. I think this color work is a great place to start because there aren't a lot of long floats. It's a really simple graphic repeat, and it's not a taxing like memorization situation or anything like that. So I'm optimistic about trying this new technique. Plus, it's been kind of a while since I've tried a super new technique with a knitting pattern. And so I feel like this is an appropriate level of challenge, as we say in gifted education, appropriate level of challenge for me to use the skills that I have in color work knitting, but add something new. So I'm looking forward to knitting and wearing this sweater. I think it's another really wearable kind of relaxed knit that will look great with a dress underneath or jeans or pants. So that is the sole blouse designed by Agio Knit, and I'm knitting that with Foster Sheep Farm Concordia. Ever-expanding skill set. I continue to cook from the Six Seasons A New Way with Vegetables cookbook. And I'm now into like late fall recipes, which is very exciting. That's my happy place. This evening, I'm planning to make the Swiss chard leek and ricotta crostata using a walnut dough that is included in the cookbook. And this dough, the directions for this dough are to make it in a food processor. I have heretofore had a very strict method of making pie crust dough, which is the method my mother has always used, in a chilled metal bowl with a wire cutter and using cold butter, cold flour, and ice water. I'm going to try this method in a food processor because I have recently replaced my blender food processor, which finally just absolutely puked this summer. It's had a good run. This was a shower gift from my first wedding, and I've kept it going all this time. I really like this Cuisinart little setup with a blender and a food processor attachment. But everything was broken, and then the motor wasn't even running anymore. So it was time to replace that, and I replaced it with a Ninja system which includes the blender, also a food processor. It has a dough attachment and a smoothie cup as well. I like the technology on this Ninja so far, and I'm excited to try the food processor with the dough attachment. So I'll be reporting back or sharing that on Instagram. We'll see how it goes. I've also been using little bits of the tomato skin powder that I made this summer. This was a byproduct, and this technique of reducing waste was suggested by a listener. I'm sorry, I can't recall which listener had suggested it, and it may have come from more than one person. That when I was making my tomato conserva and using a food mill to reserve the juice and sort of like the fleshy bit of the tomatoes and extract the seeds and skins, that I could actually dry that and dehydrate that in the oven over time and then whiz it up in a food processor to make a tomato skin powder. So I did that. I dried it and dried it and dried it in this low oven. And then I put the mixture in my food processor and I pulverized it as fine as I could possibly get it. And then I sifted it through a metal sieve and discarded the seeds and also just any parts that didn't seem to be completely processed. And I had this beautiful orange red powder. And to that, I added some salt. And then I also added a packet of Penzi's spices. They were doing this, I think it was called Star Spangled or something. They were doing a promotion over the summer to raise money for campaigning. And I really liked the spice mixture because it had salt, pepper, and I think had a bit of like dried citrus in it that gave it some dimension and depth. So I added, I think, a packet and a half of that to my tomato skin powder. And it is really, really tasty, sprinkled over pasta that's been coated with some olive oil and some sour cream. I made a bow tie pasta with this mixture on it, and then I had some sun-dried tomatoes and some walnuts in the pasta. It was really, really good. It's like an umami bang, beautiful color, a little bit of heat, a little bit of tart citrus. I also think this tomato skin powder would be a good bolster to a soup or a stew or any other kind of sauce where you really wanted to kind of amp it up. And then a final idea I have right now for using this tomato skin powder is to sprinkle it over a soft cheese, like a chèvre, on a cheese plate. I think that would be really nice. So that's been keeping me ever expanding and thinking about new applications for a product that, you know, I didn't really expect to make it, but now that it's in my pantry, I'm kind of thinking about different ways to use it. For off the shelf today, I'm going to share a little bit of background and a short poem by poet Kay Ryan. She's an American poet born in 1945, and I found the bio that Poetry Foundation has on Kay Ryan to be really illuminating in terms of her work. So I'm going to read some parts of it to you and then share this short poem. Born in California in 1945 and acknowledged as one of the most original voices in the contemporary landscape, Kay Ryan is author of several books of poetry and the best of it, New and Selected Poems in 2010, won the Pulitzer Prize for poetry. Her poetry is tightly compressed, rhythmically dense, and often compared to that of Emily Dickinson and Marianne Moore. However, Ryan's often barbed wit and unique facility with recombinant rhyme has earned her the status of one of the great living American poets and led to her appointment as poet laureate in 2008. She held the position for 2 terms, using the appointment to champion community colleges, like the one in Marin County, California, where she and her partner, Carol Adair, taught for over 30 years. In an interview with the Washington City Paper, toward the end of her tenure as poet laureate, she called herself a whistleblower who advocated for much underpraised and underfunded community colleges across the nation. Her quizzical, philosophical, often mordant poetry is a product of years of thought. Ryan has said that her poems do not start with imagery or sound, but rather develop the way an oyster does, with an aggravation. I love that. Her poems develop the way an oyster does, with an aggravation. Critic Megan O'Rourke has written of her work, "Each poem twists around and back upon its argument like a river retracing its path. They are didactic in spirit, but a bedrock of wit supports them." So here is the poem I've selected for us today, titled, "In Case of Complete Reversal." Born into each seed is a small anti-seed, useful in case of some complete reversal. A tiny but powerful kit for adapting it to the unimaginable. If we could crack the fineness of the shell, we'd see the bundled minuses stacked as in a safe, ready for use if things don't go well. In case of complete reversal. Born into each seed is a small anti-seed, useful in case of some complete reversal. A tiny but powerful kit for adapting it to the unimaginable. If we could crack the fineness of the shell, we'd see the bundled minuses stacked as in a safe, ready for use if things don't go well. Thanks so much for listening. I wish you a wonderful, wonderful week that includes time for the crafting you enjoy. Take care.